Chapter 2.
Why are you living in the Roosevelt Hotel, buddy? Dobbs asked Curtin as they passed the Southern Hotel. You pay at least 5 paces a day there.
7.
Curtin answered. Better come bunk with me in the Oso Negro. 50 centavos the cot.
I couldn't stand the dirt and living among that crowd of tramps, beachcombers, and damn bums.
All right, President. Just as you like, Dobbs said.
Some beautiful day, when all the pretty money is gone, you'll land in that dirt, too. Bet you. Right now, I could afford to stop in any swell joint for a while. But I learned my lesson. I keep my little buckies together. Who knows in which of the next 4 centuries another job will come along. It's getting worse every day here. Say 4, 5, or 6 years back, you were begged to accept a job and make your price. Different now. To me, it doesn't look a bit as if it would change for the better during the next few years. Believe it or not, I'm still going to the chink for my eats. 50 centavos each meal. I don't mind. Nobody gives me anything when I haven't got a dime. They had reached the corner of the plaza where the great jewelry house, La Perla, had its store. In the 4 huge windows was a display of diamonds and gold which could hardly be equaled on Broadway. There was a diadem on display priced at 24,000 pesos. Never could there be any occasion in this port for a lady to wear such a costly diadem. It was not for wear in this town, as whoever bought it would know. A few hundred men in this town made such heaps of money and made it so quickly and with so little sweat that they simply did not know what to do with it. Luxurious cars were out because there were no roads for them, and the streets were mostly still in such a condition that only the flivver could go anywhere. These men could invest their money, and they did. But the more they invested, the more money they made. And then they were faced with the same question again, only this time more urgently. What to do with that dough? The proprietors of La Perla knew what they were doing when they displayed such high-priced jewelry. Any piece that looked pretty to a newly rich oilman and that carried a fantastically high price was rarely in the window for more than 3 days. Then it was sold to a man who stepped in looking like a bum, without a coat on, soiled all over with oil. Wrap this up for me and be quick about it. I'm in a hurry. And throwing the money on the counter, he would put the elegant little case in his pants pockets as though it were a cake of soap, and leave without saying thank you or so long. Dobbs and Curtin looked at these treasures, worth altogether near $100,000, and a crowd of thoughts sprang up in their minds. Of stealing any of these jewels, they did not think for a minute. During all the years the boom was on, there was practically no bank holdup, no wholesale robbery in the port. The only bank holdup that occurred left not one of the bandits reaching the curbstone alive, and the man waiting outside in a car had to be taken to the hospital, where everything possible was done not to let him survive. These jewels displayed behind window panes were as safe as inside a vault. It was not that people were any better here than anywhere else. There were pickpockets everywhere in town, American pickpockets, of course, taking the lead, but banks and jewelry were safe from bandits. Bandits could not make a getaway, as there were no roads on which cars could run. Only 2 trains left the port daily, and these could be watched successfully even by third-rate detectives. All ships, passengers, and freighters alike had their guards on the gangways. The port was protected on one side by the sea, on the other side by river, swamps, and jungle. The 3 or 4 dirt roads leading out of the port were watched by mounted police. Mexicans might have kept in hiding, but they were not smart enough to do a big job of this sort. American bandits had no chance to hide anywhere, since all bandits knew from experience that no bandit, if caught, would ever arrive at a police station alive. People, yes, even mere boys, could walk the streets with bags filled to the brim with gold coins on their shoulders without being accompanied, and they would bring home the money surer than in an armored car in the United States. So, it was not the thought of robbing the store that occupied the minds of Dobbs and Curtin. All those living and working in the port at that time were concerned with oil, and nothing else. Whatever you did had in some way or other to do with oil. Even when eating your dinner or drinking your coffee, the smell of oil was about you. You might see a lady well-dressed, perfumed and all. You would be sure to find somewhere about her a stain or a spot of oil on the elegant dress, the white shoes, the umbrella, or the handbag. Somewhere you would find traces of oil, you bet. Now, looking at all the gold in the window, for the first time in months, if not in years, Dobbs and Curtin thought of gold and for a minute forgot to think of oil. Then they stood with their backs against the post office building, looked across the plaza, and saw the masts of the ships that were in dock. Only the upper parts of the masts were visible from where they stood in the bow of a freighter. Seeing the masts reminded them of travels in faraway countries, so they came to think of other countries in the world and other possibilities of making money. Why should it be oil all the time? Wasn't there anything else on Earth? Take gold, for instance, to name only one thing. Say, Kurtz, what's your idea? Dobbs asked. I mean, your idea about all this here. Hanging around all the time, waiting and waiting until you land a job again for a few weeks or a few months. Then you're on the bum again, waiting and waiting for another break. Forever dependent on the good humor of a contractor who may or may not take you in. And your money getting thinner every day. After a while, you're broke, and you begin once more pushing gents for a dime, sleeping in freight cars or under trees or what have you. I'm sick of it. Sick of oil. That's it, sick of oil. I want to see something different. Want to hear somebody talking or something else.
Same here, pal. Exactly the same. In fact, I'm thinking now for the third time of pulling out of here. I know perfectly well how it goes. Into a job, out of a job, polishing the corner of the banking company in the Southern and waiting for some guy to step up and take you on for another few months. Why not try gold digging for a change?
You said it, buddy. Dobbs nodded. That's what I was thinking as I stood before that layout of gold and diamonds. Prospecting, that's the word. Come to think of it, it isn't any more risky than waiting here for another break. Did it ever occur to you, old man, that this is the country where the heaps of gold and silver are just calling for you to help them out of their misery? Help them out of the ground? Make them shine in coins on the fingers and necks of swell dames? Well, my man, we're right on the spot.
Let's sit on that bench over there,
Curtin suggested.
We have to figure this out. It's a swell idea. We have to make plans. Just wait a minute. Let me think this over.
After they were seated, Curtin continued.
Tell you a secret. I didn't come to this here country for oil. Never dreamed of it. I had my nose full of it already in San Antonio, old Texas. No, I came here just for gold, and nothing but. My idea was to work for a year or two here in the camps to stow away enough dough to buy a decent outfit, and then off to the Sierra, west, and more west, and there, look for the real thing that counts, but damn it all, I never got the money. When I had $500 and was all set to make another five, then there was no job for months, and the money went rolling away from me just like that.
In fact, Dobbs said, the risk isn't so big. To wait here until you land another job is just as tough. If you're lucky, you may make $300 a month. If you're unlucky, you may wait for 12 months, not get even a job carrying lumber. And what's in the risk anyway? If we don't touch gold, it may be silver. If it isn't silver, it may be copper or lead or precious stones. There's always something to be found that has value. Life is cheaper in the open than it is here. Our money lasts longer. And the longer it lasts, the greater is our chance of digging up something. When it came to making more definite plans, they found that the money they had was far from sufficient to make even a try. So their enthusiasm died down. Once more, men who had a good idea appeared to give it up as soon as they met the first obstacle. This happened to most of the men here. There was not a single man in port who had not thought several times of looking for a lost gold mine or for a new one. All the mines in the country which produced any kind of mineral had been found and opened by men who originally went out to look for gold. Then, not finding any gold, even in small quantities, they were well satisfied with copper, lead, zinc, or even talcum. Dobbs and Curtin would, most likely, never have thought again of looking seriously for gold after they had talked it over. It was so much easier to sit and watch two men at work in a rather dangerous position on a roof fixing telephone wires. It was so much less trouble than thinking for yourself, or standing all day long opposite the bank, waiting for something to turn up all by itself. It is always more convenient to dream of what might be. Curtin decided to stay one night more at the Roosevelt, and the next day change over to the Oso Negro. When Dobbs returned home, he found in the same shack with him three other Americans. The rest of the cots were not yet occupied. One of the three Americans was an elderly fellow, whose hair was beginning to show white. On entering, Dobbs noted that the three fellow guests ceased their talk. After a while, they took it up again. The old man was lying on his cot. The other two were sitting half undressed on theirs. Dobbs started to turn in. At first, he did not catch what they were talking about. It did not take him long to understand that the old fellow was telling the two younger men his experience as a prospector. The two young men had come to the Republic to look for gold, because back home the most fantastic tales about the riches of lost gold mines here in this country had stirred their ambition to make their millions down here.
Anyway,
Howard, the old fellow, said,
anyway, gold is a very devilish sort of thing, believe me, boys. In the first place, it changes your character entirely. When you have it, your soul is no longer the same as it was before. No getting away from that. You may have so much piled up you can't carry it away, but bet your blessed paradise the more you have, the more you want to add, to make it just that much more, like sitting at roulette. Just one more turn, so it goes on and on and on. You cease to distinguish between right and wrong. You can no longer see clearly what's good and what's bad. You lose your judgment. That's what it is.
I don't see why.
One of the youngsters broke in.
Oh, yes, you'll see it. When you go out, you'll tell yourself, I shall be satisfied with 50,000 handsome smackers, or the worth of it, so help me, Lord, and cross my heart. Elegant resolution. After swearing the hell out of you, going short of provisions and seeing nothing and finding nothing, you come down to 40,000, then to 30, then you reach 5,000, and you say to yourself, oh, if I could only make 5 grand, Lord, I sure would be grateful and never want anything more in all my life.
5,000 wouldn't be so bad after all.
The same young fellow butted in. Oh, be quiet. Can't you shut up a minute when you see somebody's telling you something worth listening to, you mug?
It's not at all so easy as you fellers think it might be.
Howard went on.
You'd be satisfied with 5 grand, but I tell you, if you find something, then you couldn't be dragged away. Not even the threat of miserable death could stop you getting just 10,000 more. And if you reach 50, ooh, you want to make it 100 to be safe for the rest of your life. When you finally have 150, you want 200 to make sure, absolutely sure, that you'll be really on the safe side come what may.
Dobbs had become excited. To show that he had a right to be there and to listen to the wise man, he said, that wouldn't happen to me, I swear it. I'd take 20,000, pack up and go. I'd do that even if there were still a $500,000 worth lying around howling to be picked up. I wouldn't take it. It's just 20 grand that I'm after to make me perfectly happy and healthy. Howard looked at him, scrutinizing, it seemed, every wrinkle of his face. He did so for quite a while, but he answered indirectly, as though he hadn't been interrupted. He continued,
whoever's never been out for gold doesn't know what's really going on at the spot. I know for a fact it's easier to leave a gambling table when you're winning than to leave a rich claim after you made your good cut. It's all spread out before you, like the treasures of that Arabian mug, Aladdin. It's all yours for the taking. No, sir, you can't leave it. Not even with a wire in your fist that your old mother back home is dying and all alone. See, I've dug in Alaska and made a bit. I've been in the crowd in British Columbia and made there at least my fair wages. I was down in Australia, where I made the fare back home with a few hundred left to cure me of a stomach trouble I caught down there. I've dug in Montana and Colorado, and I don't know where else.
One of the youngsters asked,
as you say, mister, you've dug practically all over the world. Then how come you're sitting here flo in this dirty joint and all broke?
Gold, my young man, that's the gold and what it makes out of us. There was a time when I had a bank account of over 100,000 spot cash and another 100 grand invested. One of the banks went singing the old song. There wasn't 1 cent to the dollar left. Two of the investments failed and left me with the first claim on a melting company. After all was paid out, I had on hand a debt of some 16 grand. I've made here in this port some 70 grand on a gusher. The last 50, which I kept with the idea that I'd never touch the principal, went into a dry hole. So, you see me here now on the Oso Negro, pushing old friends in the street to get 50 centavos for a cot to sleep on. Sure, I'm an old bone by now, no doubt as to that. But don't you kids think that the spirit is gone? Not on your life. I'm all set to shoulder pickaxe and shovel again any time you say, any time someone's willing to share the expenses. I'd like best to go all alone, all by myself, but I haven't got the funds to do that. Tell you, the best thing is going alone. Of course, you must have the guts to stand loneliness. A lot of guys go nutty being alone for a long time. On the other hand, going with a partner or two is dangerous. All the time, murder's lurking about. The cuts are not so good as when you're all by yourself.
Worst of all, hardly a day passes without quarrels. Everybody accusing everybody else of all sorts of crimes and suspecting whatever you do or say or even look at. As long as there's no find, the noble brotherhood will last. Woe when the piles begin to grow. Then you know your men and what they are worth.
None of the three fellows interrupted the old prospector. Lying on their cots, they listened to his talk with more eagerness than they would have shown in reading a hot story. Here one of the true regulars was speaking, and such a chance might never come again. The stories told in the quips seemed to them right now just so much rot. Whoever writes these stories, anyhow? Men sitting in an office in a big city? Men who never been on the spot themselves? What do they know? The real life is quite different. Here it was, the real life. And the man who had lived the real life and had seen the world, who had been rich, very rich, and who was now so broke that he had to ask a fellow in the street for 50 centavos for a meal with the chink. Once started, and seeing around him three fellows who forgot their breathing while he spun his yarns, Howard gave them a story such as they never could have read in a magazine sold at street corners.